Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The New World Order is a political and social treatise by H.G.G. Wells, first published in 1940, shortly after the outbreak of the Second World War. Unlike Wells' popular scientific romances, this book belongs to his body of non-fiction devoted to history, world politics, socialism, and the future organization of humanity. Its central purpose is to ask whether a durable world peace is possible, how it might be achieved, and what kind of political order such a peace would require. Wells argues that the existing system of sovereign nation-states, imperial rivalries, and balance of power diplomacy cannot prevent repeated catastrophe. In its place, he proposes a planned world order grounded in international cooperation, scientific administration, socialized economic organization, and enforceable human rights. The book is historically important because it links wartime urgency with early arguments for global governance and a declaration of basic human liberties. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Wells rejects balance of power politics as a permanent cause of war. A central argument of the New World Order is that war is not merely the result of bad leaders or temporary diplomatic failure. Wells treats modern war as a structural outcome of a world divided into competing sovereign states, each armed, suspicious, economically self-interested, and capable of mobilizing entire populations. The older European method of preserving peace through alliances and balance of power appears to him not as a solution but as a mechanism that periodically delays conflict until a larger crisis erupts. Writing in 1940, Wells saw the Second World War as evidence that the international order after the First World War had not resolved the underlying problem. His reasoning is practical rather than sentimental. If each state retains final authority over military power, trade policy, territory, and national prestige, then no higher framework exists to restrain escalation. Peace, therefore, cannot depend on goodwill alone. It requires institutions strong enough to make war politically obsolete. This makes the book less a pacifist appeal than a diagnosis of international anarchy. Secondly, international functionalism offers cooperation through shared global tasks. Wells is associated with an early theoretical form of international functionalism, and the New World Order gives that idea a clear political role. Rather than imagining peace as a simple treaty among governments, he emphasizes the need for international bodies that manage practical functions across borders. Problems such as transport, finance, production, communication, health, and security cannot be solved effectively when every state treats them as separate national possessions. Functional cooperation matters because it shifts attention from symbols of sovereignty to the actual systems that sustain modern life. In this sense, Wells anticipates later arguments that global order may grow through specialized institutions as much as through grand constitutional design. The importance of this approach is that it avoids reducing world government to a single dramatic act. It suggests that durable peace depends on reorganizing the everyday machinery of civilization. However, Wells still wants these functions directed toward a larger political settlement, not left as scattered technical committees without democratic or moral purpose. Thirdly, a scientifically planned socialist order is presented as necessary but risky. The book argues that modern society has become too complex and interconnected to be governed by uncoordinated markets, imperial privilege, or inherited class interests. Wells therefore presents some form of socialism as unavoidable if humanity is to avoid waste, insecurity, and militarized competition. His socialism is not mainly a romantic celebration of workers or a narrow party program. It is a belief that production, distribution, education, and public welfare must be planned rationally on a global scale. Scientific planning, in his view, can replace chaotic rivalry with coordinated abundance and reduce the social pressures that feed nationalism and war. Yet the argument is not free of tension. Centralized planning can solve problems of scale, but it can also create concentrated power. Wells recognizes this danger and repeatedly ties planning to civil liberties and public accountability. The value of the book lies partly in this unresolved balance. It shows a writer attracted to organized collective control while also aware that collectivism without safeguards can harden into tyranny. Fourthly, human rights are treated as the moral foundation of world government. One of the most historically significant aspects of the New World Order is its insistence that global political reorganization must include a declaration of human rights. Wells does not treat rights as a decorative supplement to administrative reform. He understands that a world state or world authority would be dangerous if it merely transferred coercive power from national governments to a larger center. Rights are therefore necessary to define what no government, even a global one, may legitimately violate. The book stresses protections such as personal liberty, freedom of expression, and an unrestricted press, because these are mechanisms for resisting abuse and exposing corruption. this emphasis connects Wells to the wider movement that later shaped post-war human rights discourse. Even though later documents developed through different institutions and political negotiations, his approach is distinctive because it fuses two impulses often held apart: collectivist planning and individual protection. He wants a stronger public order, but he also wants that order bounded by explicit claims of human dignity. Lastly, the book reflects both wartime urgency and the limits of utopian design. The New World Order is shaped by the immediate crisis of 1940. Wells feared that the Allies lacked a sufficiently clear statement of war aims, and that victory without a new political vision would simply restore the unstable system that had produced catastrophe. This gives the book a tone of urgency. It is not a detached academic model, but an intervention in a moment when the future of Europe and the world seemed radically open. At the same time, the work shows the limitations of utopian political design. Wells describes broad principles more convincingly than he explains how resistant states, empires, classes, and publics would accept binding global authority. The gap between diagnosis and implementation is one reason readers often find the book visionary but impractical. That weakness is also part of its historical interest. It reveals how a major 20th century writer tried to think beyond national politics during a breakdown of civilization, even when the institutional path toward that future remained uncertain. In conclusion, The New World Order is best suited for readers interested in political philosophy, international relations, 20th century intellectual history, democratic socialism, and the origins of modern debates about global governance. It will be especially useful to readers who want to understand how the shock of World War encouraged ambitious proposals for institutions beyond the nation-state. The practical benefit of the book is not a ready-made blueprint for current policy. Its value lies in the questions it forces readers to confront. Can peace exist without limits on national sovereignty? Can large-scale planning be reconciled with free speech and personal liberty? Impersonal liberty, can human rights restrain political power when authority becomes global rather than national? Compared with similar works of wartime internationalism, the book stands out because Wells combines administrative, moral, and technological thinking in one argument. He is neither simply calling for peace nor merely defending socialism. He is trying to redesign the framework within which civilization operates. Modern readers may find parts of the program overconfident or insufficiently practical, but the book remains distinctive as an early, forceful attempt to connect world government, functional cooperation, social planning, and enforceable human rights into a single vision of post-war order. If you would like to support HGG, Wells, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.